Oh, just magnificent, perfect all the way through there. Hound Dog by Big Mama Thornton from 1953. And the first choice of tonight's session band, which I'm excited to say, is The Zombies. That was your choice, wasn't it, Rod?
It was my choice, yeah. I remember hearing Elvis sing Hound Dog. And in a sense, I thought that was the first black music I'd ever heard.
Mm.
And it completely turned my world around. But when I heard that, I just realised how incredible it was that Elvis, who was listening to people like that, and Arthur Big Boy Crudup, who did That's All Right Mama, which was his first record, how much he actually, you know, it's hard now when we listen to it in hindsight, but how much he actually translated from some of those black artists into his voice. It was
yeah.
quite extraordinary.
I know, that record is always invoked as like, look, this is the white man stealing from the black person. Whereas in fact, I don't think it is in that case. I think he's doing something, you know, that's so himself.
Well, exactly, because, I mean, when he did those early recording sessions, he was singing country and western, mm. and Sam Phillips said, when he was messing around and started singing That's All Right, you've got to record that, you know, and that was entirely natural.
Yeah.
And that naturalness came across. And the guy's voice, I mean, from nothing, from being a white kid, having listened to a few black records, to be able to just sink into that whole thing, just amazing. And those, every time I hear Elvis on the first, you know, couple of years that he was alive, which for me is about it, really.
Same here, yeah.
Then it's just pure magic. And, you know, this is God's jukebox, but on Rod's jukebox at home, I've got a lot of early Elvis.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go against the early Elvis at all. Yeah. It's mesmeric, but yeah. after that, it's just so shameful.
I know, anyway. I know, no, you're absolutely right.
You know what, something worth pointing out, because I watched that Dreamgirls at the weekend, I mean, very average musical. And they invoke it again in that, oh, look, who had the original of Hound Dog? It wasn't Elvis. He was stealing from the black person. In fact, it was written by two white men. So just to point that out for all the people who in these endless, tedious documentaries go, but look what Elvis did. Yeah, he did a song that was written by two white men. So I wanted to get off my chest. Cause
it's like Rock Around the Clock was written by a guy who was born in the 19th century.
Really?
1899. Yeah.
Well, you know, if there weren't influences, there would be no music, would there?
Exactly
it's ridiculous to assume anyone just came out of nowhere. Well, you weren't really a rock and roll band, though, were you? Did you play in rock and roll bands before The Zombies were formed?
I guess we were, Colin, weren't we, really? I mean, our original sort of name on the visiting cars was Zombies R&B, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what we were listening to. I mean, one of the things I always say is that one of our strengths was that we drew from a very wide spectrum of musical influences, but I think it's one of our weaknesses as well, because we kind of confused people a bit, because we used influences from church music, classical music, modern jazz, rhythm and blues, rock and roll. It's all in there. And I think, especially media people, they like to slot you. They like to say, this is this band plays this kind of music.
Mm.
But we played such a wide spectrum of music, I think we just got everyone a bit confused.
It seems like, though, I know it's probably 40 years too late to do you that much good, but people have sort of caught on to that
Well, it's a nice thought. I'm a bit worried about the records we're recording now, though. If we've got to wait 40 years for recognition, it's going to be a bit of a problem. But, I mean, yeah, it's great if people are getting into what we were doing then. I think that's wonderful.
But did you, before Zombies, the Zombies R&B group, was that kind of your first band, or were you playing in rock and roll type bands before then?
No, that was our first band. I was 15 years old. I was desperate to be in a band. I grew up loving music, but the first 10 years of my life, I just liked classical music. And as I said before, I heard Elvis, and it really turned my world around. But Jim was already in a great band. He was my cousin. He lived down the road. And he introduced me to...
Jim, we should point out, Jim is the bass player.
Is the bass
he's still his cousin.
I know the was a little bit, it was odd, wasn't it? I disassociate myself from that portion of the family after a fight at a wedding.
Exactly, it wasn't quite. But he was in this great band, and once I'd seen it, I thought, I have to be in a band. And I was at school one day, and I saw a guy playing guitar. I was 15 years old, and we formed the band from that point. This was before the Beatles, so we started off playing really, you know, what were our early things? Anything from The Shadows to sort of Little Richard
Elvis
and all that
Chuck
sort of
Berry.
Thing. Chuck Berry, that's how we started. But even from the beginning, we were doing a lot of harmony things. And when the Beatles came out and they had all their focus on harmony, it was a real parallel with what we were doing, wasn't it? Mm. Because no other bands around were doing that. And so we sort of got into all those areas. And as Colin said, I you know, all of us still listen to, you know, even though we were in love with rock and roll, we still listened to classical music, to Miles Davis and all sorts of music. So I think that came out within the mix.
This is exactly why the Zombies were known as the intellectual band of the beat boom. Wasn't it on the back of your first album? Didn't it go on about how many O-levels you all had?
That was so ridiculous. It was the lamest bit of publicity you could
it's
ever
pretty
imagine
poor publicity.
If anything will put people off.
Exactly, yeah.
That's it.
They're really smart, this band.
Yeah. And what was, we'd come out of school and they said, okay, the Decca PR man said, okay, we have to write something about the band. What have you done? We said, we've just left school. We haven't done anything.
That's it.
And he said, right, well, what did you do at school? We said, what do you mean, what did we do at school? We've just taken some exams. What did you get? Well, we got these O-levels. Okay, I'll write that. And because in England, in the UK, we only ever had one hit record, which was She's Not There.
Yeah.
That bit of publicity hung around our necks in this country, not so much in the rest of the world, but in this country, it hung around our necks forever. And when you look around, I mean, Jagger had just come out of the LSE, for God's sake. You know, Manfred Mann, they all had university degrees.
It's such a weird thing, because I don't think I've read the back cover of that album for 15 years, but it's still sticking in my mind. Jim, how many O-levels did you get?
I got six, a bit more modest.
Yeah, you couldn't have been in the Zombies in the original, in those days. You weren't smart enough. You wouldn't have been able to... They weren't even saying where the gigs were. They were giving grid references and you had to find your way.
No, they didn't have a car. I used to take them in my car.
They would make their own before the thing. They would invent an internal combustion engine on a Wednesday afternoon. They'd be at a gig that night in nearby Luton or something. Let's remind people why you are the Zombies. What are you going to do for us first?
Well, we thought we'd do this song, which... was in fact around the world our biggest ever record. It was number one in many countries, not in this country, of course, where it sort of died a death, but it became well known because it was on The Rock Machine Turns You On, the compilation album, and a lot of people got to know it. It's recently been an advert over here, Magnus Cider, so some other people got to know it through that. But we also got, I got an award for 5 million plays last year in the US, and I think it was only one of about 30 English records to reach that. So we'd love to do Time of the Season.
I'm still astonished this wasn't... we were going to use it on Buzzcocks for an intro and something, and then the researcher went, no, it was never a hit, and I really couldn't believe that.
Never.
Because it's such a soundtrack of the 60s song. But
it has been used as that, and I know In Awakenings, that was a great movie, Randy Newman chose it. Obviously, it was based in America. The film was made and based over there. But he chose it as the song to typify 1969.
Mm.
So, yeah, you're right. But over here, it's one of the few countries in the world where it wasn't a hit.
It's bizarre. Well, let's make it a hit.
Okay.
4 years. Oh, come on, let's do it.
It's the time of the season when love runs high, and this time give it to me easy and let me drive. Like me, as you take on
just absolutely phenomenal. Are you aware when you're doing that just how phenomenal it is? I know you can't answer that. It would be unfair for you to ask you, but there you go. I'm just mind-blowing. Colin, though, do you have rules on how long Rod can do a keyboard solo?
No.
Because I think, you know, a Hammond solo is one of the most beautiful things that, you know, God ever invented.
There are no rules.
But they can last for half an hour, can't they?
You try and stop him.
That's what I was
40 years.
That's what I was wondering. Because I would have been more than happy with another 12, possibly 13 minutes of that.
Well, Two, three.
Once Rod's gone, he's gone. But actually, I count it as a blessing. First of all, it's a blessing to be playing with such a talented musician. But also, we play quite long sets.
Mm.
And often we play night after night after night. So if there are these instrumental breaks and they sound very natural, it actually gives my voice a rest as well.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It actually works to my advantage, I think.
Yeah, someone like Jimmy Smith, who used to do those very long, I'm sure there were people who did much longer ones, could probably have done a gig with two songs.
Yeah.
And people wouldn't really have noticed or cared, particularly. Who were the people that, did you start playing Hammond or piano?
Piano, originally.
Right,
yeah.
In the Zombies, like?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And the Hammond player that I loved was Jimmy Smith, actually, I had to say. And I remember, you know, hearing something called The Duel. And what was the film? Walk on the Wild Side.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And actually, Jim, who's played in his time as Depp with the Animals, he said that the drummer from the Animals said that it was Walk on the Wild Side that was Jimmy
John
Smith.
John Steele of the Animals said that Walk on the Wild Side, Jimmy Smith, inspired me to play the drums I played on House of the Rising Sun.
Oh, really? I wish I had it with me. I mean, let me check on my laptop if I have got a version of Walk on the Wild Side. It's such a magnificent song anyway. I must have him, actually, as a featured artist on the show, Jimmy Smith. I haven't featured him yet. Was he the one who sort of single-handedly introduced the Hammond sound? Because he does seem to be the one that even all of the other Hammond players sort of go, yeah, that was...
Yeah, Jimmy McGriff was another one.
Yeah.
He was very influential. He was much more sort of R&B and soul. Jimmy, as you know, was very jazzy.
Kind of started off jazzy, but then by the mid-60s, he was kind of only doing soul covers and theme tune covers and stuff,
wasn't
he?
Single he released, actually. He sings I Got My Mojo Working.
Oh, I've got that, yeah,
he's
yeah.
Great as a vocal too.
Yeah.
Yeah, really funky.
It's about, he did a whole album of like those, Boom Boom, he did another really good version of Boom Boom as well. Anyway, we're just chit-chatting amongst ourselves. Come and join us. Don't really, we might not get on. Let's have another song then. What are you doing currently when you tour? Because obviously people want to hear Time of the Season, She's Not There and stuff.
We do a real mix, and I have to say that one of the things that, you know, we're not doing this to try and make a buck, and sometimes that's how I explain it to the rest of the guys. But we're doing it really because we got together by accident in around the year 2000 when I did a charity show, strange enough, for John Dankworth, who's quite a close neighbour of mine. And Colin was in the audience, and he got out on the spur of the moment. He sang, you know, Time of the Season, She's Not There. And after the show, we talked about putting six gigs together. And those six gigs have turned into 6 years of touring America many times now, the Far East, Holland, whatever. But one of the things that gives us energy is doing some new stuff as well as just the old stuff, because we're not doing this just to be an oldies band. We're really not. Although within the context of doing new stuff, we're really happy to do any or all of the old stuff. And when we do some Odyssey and Oracle stuff, for instance, it's never been played live because we broke up when that album came out. So it's a real mix, you know. We do old Zombies things, we do old Zombies covers that we used to do in the first thing, place of R&B things. We do some of Colin's solo stuff, we do a couple of Argent things. We just go through the whole career, really.
I should point out as well that this is one of the only bands we've ever had on the show who actually aren't plugging anything. There's nothing new out. I just saw that you were doing the Odyssey and Oracle tour next year, and I said, oh, well, just, you know, put a bid in for whenever they pass in, they can pop in.
Oh, cool.
Within a couple of weeks, oh, I've got nothing to do. We'll come in and do that. I'll kill an afternoon. So what are you going to do for us now?
Well, if you want this, I mean, we can do whatever you want, but we thought it'd be rather nice. We've started to do an old cover that we used to play even before we turned professional, an old Ray Charles song called Sticks and Stones. And we recorded that. We weren't really very happy with our original recording of that, but we love playing it on stage, and we actually opened the set with this, so we thought we'd do that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
One, two, three.
Magnificent. You know what? There are no rules, obviously, in music, and this show, I hope, reflects a very broad spectrum of various things. And sometimes people write in saying, I didn't like that, I like that, and that's it's all fine. And then, you know, there's no right or wrong. But if you don't like Ray Charles, you're wrong. That's the only law, really, isn't it? If you don't like Ray, what sort of person wouldn't like Ray Charles? He's this, as I often say about various artists, even racists would go, yeah, but him, he's fine. That's the way it is. There's a famous story, actually. I don't know if I can get away with it. No. Sorry, there's a word in it that it would be unacceptable, even though... I'll move on. We'll have some more from the Zombies later on. Carrie by Joni Mitchell from the 1971 Blue Album, the second choice of tonight's session. Man, that was your choice, wasn't it, Colin?
It was indeed.
Do you think... I don't know anything about this, but are vocalists more kind of attuned to songs that feature vocalists, if you know what I mean? I know most songs feature vocalists.
I think possibly they are. I think I certainly am. I think I'm going back to my youth, really. I'm going back to singer-songwriters. That's who I listen to, really, for pleasure.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the most beautiful albums ever recorded, and that's probably one of the best tracks on there. I think she's just brilliant.
Yeah, you do notice these albums that are endlessly invoked by people in interviews and stuff, and there is a reason why they've stood that test of time.
Oh, absolutely. It's spectacular. And she's a wonderful writer, and she's just got the most beautiful voice.
Also, there's that kind of... I don't know if folk is the right word for you lot, but when Odyssey and Oracle, which is a big leap... I don't know if it's necessarily forward, but sideways from your first album. Mm. There is a real sort of bucolic air to it. It's not necessarily folk, but there are kind of folk. There's a lot of folk influence in there as well.
Yeah, possibly there is. Yeah.
Very English.
I mean, it is a very English album.
Very
yes.
English.
And not in the, normally when people say very English, they mean someone doing Ray Davis, and it's the complete opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, there are many, you know, many components that make up being English.
And we didn't realise at the time how English it was, actually, because, in fact, I didn't listen to it for years. And then when the Zombies box set came out, which was put together by Alec Palau, and put together beautifully, I have to say, in about 97, I listened to everything all the way through. It's the first time I'd listened to that album all the way through for many years. And it, because I just thought it was us doing songs, you know. But it really struck me how English it sounded and how unlike the previous records that we've made. And I don't quite know why, but...
Not just unlike... It's unlike anyone else's records. I mean, there was kind of a feel of that at the time, but it is such a beautiful, unique album.
Thank you.
And always will be. It is, by the way, we should point out, the competition which we'll be doing after this session. We also have 5 copies of the Zombies Heaven box set, which is everything you did in the 60s, isn't it?
It's everything we ever did.
Right, yeah. I suppose, yeah, I suppose...
Oh, that was in the 60s, no, you're
yes,
right,
no,
of course.
Everything you ever did was
Sorry,
in the 60s.
Sorry, I thought that was a trick question.
No. But, of course, everything... Did you... You broke up just at
67.
Just as it finished?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't a trick question at all. I was just explaining to people, were they ever... not even... A quintuple whammy tonight with the competition prizes. Are you going to do something for Modest and Oracle? No, you don't have to. But
well,
as we
can do
about it.
If you want, yeah. Do you want to do... Do you want to try Beechwood Park?
Have a go.
It was only because we were talking about it earlier.
I mentioned before the show that I think it was the Bees a couple of weeks ago had this as one of their influential tracks. Do you know the Bees work at all?
I don't.
You would probably they are like that. There was a lot of young zombies in them. I'm sure you would you'd enjoy it. Well, let's dedicate this Beechwood Park to the Bees, and it's not a track that the boys, if that's okay.
If the men were
going to choose to play tonight, and I'm delighted that they are. So
well, we haven't played this for God knows how long. So
hey, if it's bad,
it
I'll tell you.
Okay.
That's it. I'm leaving the car here and I'm floating home. That was just so remarkable. You know, and you know what? Any of you who have the box set or have some Zombies albums and that, put that track on and then put Woman on and then marvel that it's the same band. It is phenomenal that range of stars within such a short space of time. Do you think that's because, I mean, I often say I do a 60s show here on Radio 2, and I always say it was just obviously the most fertile decade of all time. There were just so many collisions happening at once.
There really were. And you know, I always believe that's almost completely down to the Beatles.
Really?
I really do, actually, because I think that they... I think that they were at the cutting edge of so much that was going on. And when they first came out, you know, they introduced all the harmony things. They were listening to all the blues records that were imported into Liverpool. And they were really hungry to listen to modern contemporary classical music.
Yeah.
Lennon was doing the electronic things. And it sort of... Mind you, I do also think that it was a time, you know, after the wartime austerity where everything was exploding, actually, socially and in every other way. So it didn't seem like there were any limits to anything.
Yeah.
And people were just experimenting and just going out on all sorts of limbs, and everything felt possible.
But in terms of Zombies writing, you know, me being the singer, and I only wrote sort of two tunes for the band, so I watched these two guys develop as writers. And Woman was one of the first songs that Rod ever wrote. And then sort of gradually, over a period of 3 years, I thought they were very prolific, and they became more and more sophisticated.
Mm.
And Beechwood Park is right at the end of the band's career. And I think they hit a really golden patch, Rod Argent and Chris White, when we did Odyssey and Oracle. And all those songs, they're real little gems.
I actually meant, isn't Woman a great track as well, but they're just such different styles. It is, of course, much more sophisticated lyrically than Tell Her No or something like that.
But you know, the funny thing was that I always thought of Woman as one of our more embarrassing things, but I heard there was a great film called Dear Wendy that was out not that long ago. It was Lars von Trier, the guy who did Dogville.
He
did that. And he started with the Zombies soundtrack. That's how the film was started. And there were about seven songs in it, and Woman's one of those songs. And when it came up and they started playing it in the film, I thought, oh dear, what am I going to think of this? That shit sounded great.
it's a great record. It is possibly a little more derivative than say, Beechwood Park, that's, you know, as we were saying earlier on, if there were no derivations, where would we? We'd just be banging a stick on a rock.
That's true.
That's all we got. You're doing this whole Odyssey and Oracle. Is it a tour or just a one-off next year?
It's two nights at the Shepherd's Bush Empire.
Has that become your pet sounds? Because that is obviously the
Well, we were approached, funnily enough, at the same time as Brian Wilson did Pet Sounds and Arthur Lee did Forever Changes. And it was, I think, originally thought of as three concerts. To play albums in their entirety that had never been played before.
At the Festival Hall.
And at the time it wasn't possible for us to do it. And then suddenly we realised it was 40 years since the album had been released, and we thought it would be great. We've never ever played Odyssey and Oracle in its entirety. And so the remaining members of the band, sadly, Paul Atkinson passed away, but the remaining members of the band are going to get together and play it in its entirety.
That is amazing. It must be a lovely feeling for you lot as well.
Well, it's really exciting, maybe a little bit scary as well, because we haven't played together except for a couple of nights.
And you can't read the words off a bit of paper there. I don't want to give any showbiz games away, but there you go. Let's have another track from you.
Well, we thought we would play the thing that started everything off for us. Which
I
is she's not.
Without my glasses.
She's not there.
Yeah, put your pad away for this one. I'm nudging you if you don't know the words to this one.
Too late to say I'm sorry. How would I know if I
exactly why that song was a hit twice within about 3 years or something, wasn't it?
Well, it was hit in 64 for the Zombies, yeah. And I think it was about 10 years later for Santana.
And it also made the charts by the UK subs.
It made the charts by Neil McCartney.
That's Neil what I was mentioning, because that was
1969, yes. It was a hit again.
It was.
Which was you under... Why did you ever sue him?
Well, I'd had a little rest from the business, you know, and a very persuasive producer who was incredibly successful at the time, called Mike Hurst, and he'd just been recording all the early Cat Stevens tunes. He said, Colin, you've got to get back in the studio. Time of the Season was number one in America. And I thought, well, it would be exciting to get back into the studio. And I left it all up to him, because I was just sort of testing the water. And he said, let's do She's Not There Again. And I never quite followed the reasoning for that myself, but it seemed like a fun idea. And then he said, well, change your name. You're going to be Neil McArthur. And I just went along with it. I didn't think it would be a hit. But if it's a hit, then of course you've got to be Neil McArthur.
Yeah.
So for a year, people were saying to me, Neil. And I was getting down on my knees. Why are they saying Neil to me? And then eventually I came to my senses and got back to my real name and started recording with Rod Argent and Chris White.
That must be a unique occurrence, though, that someone has a hit with the same song twice under different names within such a short period of time.
It's strange, isn't
and
it?
And it's probably not as strange as the UK subs version, which I've never heard. And, you know, if I die and I'm a billion years old and I still haven't, I'll be happy. I can't imagine the UK subs doing that song. I don't even want to. Well, anyway, we'll have some more from the Zombies later on. Time for some more tracks from this week's competition prize. We have got the Zombie Heaven box set to be given away as well, but I can't play anything from that because they're here. It would be almost rude. But we also have The Change Is Gonna Come, Voice of Black America compilation, political songs from 1963 to 1973. This track is called The Prayer, and it's by Ray Scott. Final choice of tonight's session, man, The Zombies. It was Cream, obviously, with I Feel Free. Who was the pianist in Cream?
It was the pianist.
Yeah, I've never noticed the piano all the way there. Only one note.
Might have been Nicky Hopkins.
Was it Jack Bruce?
If he overdubbed it, he might have done it, yeah.
Yeah. He wouldn't have done it live, would he?
No. Nicky Hopkins.
That would have been... Even he's not that good.
Nicky did loads of session work at that time.
Isn't it amazing? Jack Bruce, you know, not only on that record, but then he also played bass on Lily the Pink. I think he did. He did. That's another one of those great career moves within a year or so. Just the breadth of what he could do there. The final track of tonight's session, Ben, The Zombies. We haven't really met who are the current Zombies. We've met Rod and Colin, of course.
Well, we've got on bass is the guy who's my cousin, Jim Rodford.
Who was your cousin, and he's again now.
And he is again now, yeah. He's back in the fold. And in fact...
Colin brought the family back together again earlier on. If you missed the earlier portion
of
the show.
When you get to our age, that's really important.
It was a really nice thing. It was like watching Trisha, but with more respectable people.
Exactly. and Jim actually was the founder member of Argent with me. And after Argent, for 20 years, he played with the Kinks. On their really big selling records in America, I have to say, on Come Dancing and some of the things that sold most in America. And he's also played with Lonnie Donegan and some really seminal names.
Some good bands to be in there.
Yeah.
How come they didn't let you in the Zombies in the first place, though, Jim?
We did ask him, actually.
Oh, okay, because he was at the first...
He was at the first rehearsal, yeah. And he had a car and all the gear.
That's why you asked him.
Rod said he'd be in my new band. He was just forming it, but they were just 15 at school. I said, well, you know, my band were about 5 years older than them. So I said, well, I'll help you get you started. I won't be in it. So I set up our little bits of equipment at the youth club, took them down there in my car, told them, well, not told them how to play, but gave them some pointers, and off they went, and the rest is history.
Jim, by the way, has a bit of a wonky walk, and that's from kicking himself for the next 10 years after that after that particular incident. Easy now to say. Who else have we got?
We got on drums, we've got Jim's son, Steve. Now, Steve has played with Leo Lyons, Mick Abrahams, but he's just a great drummer. You know,
that's good, but it's like, you know, the Kinks and Lonnie Donegan.
No, I know,
So you got your big old dad shoes to fill there.
Well, he has. But
he's on drums, it don't matter.
Yeah, that's true.
And then on guitar is Keith Airey from the famous Airey dynasty. Don Airey has been in many famous bands. Keith?
He's in Deep Purple, right?
Deep Purple right now, and who else?
Whitesnake.
Rainbow, yeah.
The big rock trilogy there.
But Keith's played with Tom Jones, Nick Kershaw. He was on Live Aid, the original Live Aid, weren't you, Keith?
Yeah.
Buckingham Palace concert.
Nick always talks about when he did the Buzzcocks, one of the best days of his life.
Who was that?
Nick Kershaw.
Oh, right, yeah. Oh, God, that was right at the beginning.
Yeah,
that was
right early on, yeah.
A good 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
Or so. When I was still on it. That's how long ago it was. He's a lovely fellow, actually.
Yeah,
I've forgotten
he was on there.
Great musician as well, actually.
Yeah, amazing.
Is he? Never really... Because to me, I see him as a pop star, you know.
Well, he got stuck into that teeny bopper sort of image, and it's such a shame, because he's just a great musician.
Got to say, when we were in New York, Miles Davis came to see us to meet Nick Kershaw. I'm not joking, I met Miles Davis through Nick Kershaw. So that gives you some idea of... That he was pretty
Oh, I thought you were just going to do. I got to say, Miles Davis came just to show off. That would have been enough.
Well, I was showing off as well.
Yeah, that's fair enough. If a story can't be self-serving, it's not really worth telling a lot of the time, is it?
Exactly that.
But he never came again, Miles, did he? Because Nick blanked him and told him to.
He didn't phone or anything.
That would be awful to be Miles Davis and to be blanked by Nick Kershaw.
Do you know he was? Miles was one of my real heroes when I was growing up, and. I did some record production with a guy called Peter Van Hook, who was the drummer with Van Morrison. We had some real success with Tanita Tikaram and Nancy Griffith and some other people. And we were doing one track and with Tanita, and we said, you know, the only person who would be right for this, two people would be okay. One is Mark Isham, who Pete knew, and the other is Miles Davis, ha-ha. And the guy from the record company happened to be there that day. He said, Miles is in town. We've just signed him. He'll come up and do it. And I said, no. Absolutely not, because I could just imagine it going wrong. You know, one of your real heroes coming on and I'd be a complete prat, you know, completely let myself down. And I just couldn't stand the idea of that. So I said no to Miles.
Wow. Yeah. Well, but also it could have worked the other way. He might have come in and you'd have gone, he was no good. Yeah, everyone can have an off day, can't they? We could have been unpleasant or whatever. Like those things do happen very, very often. Well, you know what? You saying that, this is like... You and Miles Davis, this is not like me having the zombies on my show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Looking at you, they're playing. I'm like, I still can't believe the little old boy from Swindon with his, you know, half a dozen jokes that he stretched out for 20-odd years, and now the zombies are playing on his show. It's astonishing to me, and I want to thank you very much for coming on. We've got a final song, which I think is a new one, isn't it?
It's been such a pleasure to be on the show, and actually... this is the last song that I've heard, anyway, that was written by Colin. It's a very new song. I think it's great, actually, and it's called Any Other Way.
Filthy air. Nothing.
brand new track from Rock Boffins, The Zombies. I think that was good. Any other way? Is it was good?
That's right.
Yeah, no, excellent. You just sing such fine voice. Have you sung consistently since 1961?
No, I haven't.
Obviously, to sleep and well.
I've had long gaps where I haven't sung, but Rod introduced me to a great singing coach who sadly has just passed away. His name is Ian Adam, and he coaches a lot of the, or coached a lot of the West End shows. And I just went along and he just talked to me a little bit about singing technique. And if you're going to play every night, which we do when we're doing a tour, it's so important just to have a little bit of technique, especially as you get a little bit older. You can do it when you're 18, you know, you can scream your guts out and it's okay, but
not to change your voice, just to
strengthen it.
Yeah.
No, but you're still sounding great. So much so, I'd probably worth mentioning now, we were going to have Miles Davis on this week, but I said, nah, we don't need him. Thanks a lot, fellas. You know what, it did occur to me, I was at the Brian Wilson Pet Sounds gig, and I was at the Arthur Lee Forever Changes gig. So about time you pulled your fingers out and sorted out this trilogy.
Okay, you're going to come down?
I will. I'll definitely be there. Yeah,
good.
It's in Shepherd's Bush, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's near me. Otherwise, I don't know.
We'll do you a discount.
All right, yeah. I'll sneak in the back door, like in the old days. Well, it's been amazing having you on, and I can't thank you enough. Thank you very much. Time to finish off tonight's competition. I've got 5 copies of Change Is Gonna Come, The Voice of Black America. Also, 5 copies of the excellent box set Zombie Heaven, which is everything they ever did in the 60s. And let's face facts, everything they ever did in the 70s and 80s is on there as well. Probably the 90s as well. Nothing. As the zombies, of course. Anyway, here's a final portion of A Change Is Gonna Come. This is Patrice Holloway with Stay With Your Own Kind.